I am on the phone here with Charlie Parr, who is in Duluth, Minnesota right now on a break between shows. And he will be playing this coming Saturday, April 4th, at the Top Hat in Missoula with guest Betsy Ellis. Thanks, Charlie, for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great to hear your voice and hear that you're going to be coming back into Missoula. And I'd like to know, for those who are unfamiliar with your music, could you explain what style of music you play and what sorts of instruments you play?
I guess I've always thought of myself as a folk singer, even though I'm really influenced by old blues forms, rural blues, old folk forms from the 20s and 30s. I play resonator guitar, which is a bottleneck slide style guitar on a steel-bodied instrument, and I also play 12-string. It's hard to describe because, I mean, when I think about that kind of stuff, the people that I love the most as far as guitar players go anyway are guitar players from a time before a lot of these genres had been sussed out. So guys like Charlie Patton and Mance Lipscomb would have referred themselves as songsters instead of blues guitar players or folk guitar players.
Yeah, because blues and folk didn't really exist as genres at that point, as far as the nomenclature anyways.
Yeah, and that's the stuff I love to listen to the most, and that's the stuff that I find myself the most influenced by. Even a lot of contemporary music that I listen to kind of defies strong categorization. It's just music, you know. I think when you really, really love music or a song, you know, or whatever it is, you don't get hung up so much on that kind of stuff. It's just something you love. When I was young, my dad brought me up with this large, weird record collection that had a lot of everything in it. If you liked it, that was it. So in the front of the house, I'm listening to Lead Belly and Woody Guthrie and Johnny Cash and Johnny Horton and Jimmy Rogers and Mance Lipscomb and Lightnin' Hopkins. In the back of the house, my sister's listening to the Grateful Dead and Captain Beefheart, New Riders of the Purple Sage, and I thought, oh my God, it's all good. Like bouncing from one end of the house. The songs I listen to when I'm listening to records end up being songs from my dad and my sister's crazy record collection.
Yeah, and I mean, think about the Grateful Dead. Half the songs that they sang were cover songs of people like Lead Belly and Woody Guthrie and
sometimes
like
people
that.
Don't understand that very well. They ask me to do that Grateful Dead song that I do, and I'm like, which one? I don't know that I do any Grateful Dead songs.
And it's all related, and it all comes from the same place to some extent. Since you grew up listening to music, did you also grow up playing music? Did you have a musical childhood, or did you start doing this later in life?
Neither one of my folks played any instrument. When you're a parent and you've got a regret, the first thing you tend to do is to make sure your child doesn't ever have to have that regret. So my father had to stop going to school when he was young and worked in the fields and never got to learn how to play an instrument. He didn't care so much about school, but he always wanted to learn how to play the guitar. And so when I was about 7.5 years old, he went out and got me a guitar. He noticed that I was sitting around playing the same Lightnin' Hopkins, Mance Lipscomb records over and over and over again. And he got me a guitar, and then I sat there listening to those records with a guitar in my hand after that and eventually started to pick out things. It was definitely an obsession. I'm not really willing to call it an unhealthy obsession. It was definitely an obsession. Music was just always in the house. Ever since I could remember it, before I was even interested in playing it, the record player was always going.
I guess it sounds like you were mostly self-taught, but self-taught by listening to other musicians, which is really interesting because I think that's how a lot of these other musicians learn. And you probably, I don't know if it's something that I'm taking from the music that's not there, but it feels like almost your music is coming from a different time or a place. And I don't know if that has something to do with the fact that you learn from these older musicians in a way.
Yeah, that's right. I always hesitate at the self-taught because I don't really think there is such a thing. It implies that there's a vacuum of some kind. Like I said, I was really lucky to have access to music that a lot of kids on my block didn't have access to unless they came to my house. The unique thing about folk music is that it encourages a lot of participation. You listen to certain records like Woody Guthrie records, and they're not simple, but they encourage you to take part, to lend a hand, whereas Kiss, for example, you don't listen to a Kiss record and think, wow, I'm going to participate in this music. I'm going to own part of this music. No, you're just a fan of Kiss, and that's fine. We all should be fans of Kiss. That's okay. But it's not like folk music where you get to participate in it and it be part of you and vice versa. Not to pick on Kiss.
Can you be
Deep Purple, let's go that way. anyway, I got a unique perspective from when I was a kid by believing that I could be part of something that I was hearing on these records. And so when I was starting to learn how to play the guitar, like I said, I'd sit there and listen with the guitar in my hand and retune the guitar and try to play along and stumble and fall. I never felt frustrated. I always felt this was part of the process of being included in the music, that folk music to me has always felt like an inclusive, accepting genre. And I know that's not always true. That sounds a little Pollyannish, but it's always felt that way to me. And then when I started getting to get out of the house and out of my little town, and I got to go see guys like Spider John Kerner and Dave Ray, Pete Rikus, you know, and some of these guitar players up in Minneapolis that I was just going, and I'd never seen it being done before, what I loved so much, especially with Spider John, because he's a cipher. He plays in a super iconic kind of style that's all his own. I never even talked to the man for years because I was so intimidated, but just watching him play, I felt like he was a teacher of mine without having spoke with him, because I just watched him go and learned from that experience. I feel in a way like I'm the opposite of self-taught. I feel like I've been taught by a lot of different people. I've got so many sets of shoulders that I've climbed up on.
Well, ain't no grave gonna hold my body down. Ain't no grave hold my body down. Hear that trumpet sound. You're gonna get up out the ground. Ain't no grave hold my body down. Well, ain't no grave gonna hold my body down. Ain't no grave gonna hold my body down. Hear that trumpet sound. You're gonna get up out the ground. Ain't no grave gonna hold my.
I sort of think of you not just as a musician, but as a storyteller, and maybe to some extent even a music historian. Do you think of yourself more as a musician or a storyteller? And how did you come to getting such a great narrative in some of your songs? Did you come from a storytelling family, I suppose?
Yeah, Dad was a really good storyteller. and maybe I picked up a little of it from him. I've never really thought of myself as either one, actually, musician or storyteller. Those are hard mantles to wear. I think that the thing was, when I was younger, I was going to write a book. It was kind of silly. A couple friends of mine and I, we were big fans of, like, Raymond Carver, and we were going to wear sunglasses and write books and drink red wine. What ended up happening is I wrote this book. It was horrible. And I sent it to a friend of mine who actually was a good writer, and he sent me back this postcard saying, look, don't do this to the people of the world. Just put this away and get a job.
Sometimes I guess we need that kind of advice.
Sometimes you do, and he was perfectly, it was absolutely right. And I looked back at it later, and I thought, oh my God, I'm so glad that he did that. But then when I started writing songs, I kind of went back to that and started pulling out some of the germs of songs out of the stories. And that's actually the way I write songs now, is more like that process of writing a short story and then reformulating it as a song. That's kind of how it works for me now, and that's the habit that I've gotten into. It'll be really hard for me to write a traditional song. I think it would sound fairly contrived, but writing a story and then putting it to music feels natural to me. But I've never really thought of myself as a musician. I think it's hard when you don't really know what you're doing to just assume the title, even though so many people have done that before me. You know, I don't feel like I'm up at that level. I'm still learning. I was just practicing a little while today, feeling out some new ground. Any day that I get to play the guitar is going to be a positive one for me, and a day that I feel like I've gotten onto some new little piece, it's really still a big deal for me. I'm happy that that fire's never gone out.
It was late in the summer when the corn was fully grown. We'd gone for a swim in the pond on my Uncle Henry's farm. And when we got home, we saw a badger in the yard, running flat out for a hole beneath the shed. It disappeared into its den underneath the floor, and it was gone, and Dad just said, goddamn, badger can't stay, he'll kill you just like that. Mean as any grizzly, sneaky as any cat. And he went and got his gun in the closet in the hall, and he pulled a six-pack from the fridge, and he walked out the door. Well, Mom made us brush our teeth and get ourselves to bed. It's late and he'll be a while, was all that she would say. And I saw him in the twilight with his 410 across his lap, sitting in a lawn chair, staring at the shed. Fallen soldier from the six-pack laying at his feet, and sometime in the night a gunshot woke me from my sleep. It was late in the summer when the corn was fully grown. We'd gone for a swim in the pond on my Uncle Henry's farm.
Speaking of playing your guitar and just experimenting and trying to teach yourself or learn new things, do you ever just pick up a different instrument that you've never played and say, I'm going to learn how to play the mandolin today? Or do you prefer to just stick with those few instruments that you play more frequently so you can keep enriching that skill?
I stick with the guitar mostly because it hasn't lost its allure for me at all. I play the banjo a little bit. I don't currently have one. I got a little bit of financial issue, and I had to sell my banjo before my guitar goes, everything else goes. That's always been fun, but the guitar has been my first love. It's never let me down, I guess. I've never really felt bored, or I've never really felt like there's not something new to learn today. I guess when that happens, maybe I'd look to a different instrument, but guitar seems like it's got so many possibilities for me.
I'm not a musician, but my practice as an artist, because that's what I do for a living, I feel like my materials are always new to me depending on the way I'm looking at them or the way I'm using them. And
right.
It's not like I could ever just run out of ideas or things to make or do.
Right, that's exactly right. It's like the same brush that paints this picture today paints a whole new one tomorrow. That's what a guitar is. It's just a brush.
It's not even just you or the guitar. It's everything else that's happening in the world is going to influence that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I feel like I'm influenced by everything. I'm just like a sponge for all this stuff, the weather, and this recent bout of flu maybe got me thinking about things in a different way today. Practicing today felt better than it normally does just because I think I was coming off of illness.
Yeah, so maybe in some way it's healing you.
Right, exactly. And it's always done that. Music's always gotten me through some really tight spots.
Do you think that as you write the stories or songs that you're writing and you're composing the music and playing the guitar, but then you're also performing before an audience, does it, I guess, talking about the way the world influences you, to me that seems like it would really require that you be an extreme, almost an extrovert, and then part of you must be introverted enough to be able to be contemplative and write these songs. Do you find that that is the case, and how do you find a balance if that is the case?
I'm an extreme introvert. I'm extremely shy. When I was a kid, I was so shy, I would barely ever talk to people. My wife had to do a lot of work before I would even speak to her friends. It's challenging. I'm less shy now. I kind of force myself into this place where I can talk to people. I don't want to develop a weird persona to be able to talk to people. I've developed a few little tricks that I can start talking to someone, and then once you get over that weird little bump, then I can keep on going and feel like I'm being genuine, you know, and honest, because I don't want to fool anybody. But it's hard because I'm not really an extrovert. When you get up on the stage, it doesn't matter how many people are there, and you have a guitar, you get to play, then you can be an introvert again, because the audience, as much as I love having them around, they kind of go away when you get to play, because that's just how it works. I get to play, nothing else seems to matter, so I can be an introvert on stage, dealing with other parts of the business, I guess, for lack of a better term, just putting your foot into it and trying to deal with what you've just done, I guess.
Yeah, I guess you have to either make it through or not. And it does make sense that in a way you have this relationship with this instrument, this guitar, and so that you can kind of not hide behind it necessarily, but have this relationship with it on stage and not have to think about what's right. happening outside of that.
Right. Well, and I think part of that is a good thing. So far, the people that I've appreciated the most in music and in most of the arts are people who have such a passion for what they do that when they sit down and do what they do, I can feel it. And I appreciate just how much they're moved by the act of touching the strings. There's this great quote, I forgot what book it's in, Kurt Vonnegut had written about a painter who said that it wouldn't matter if anybody ever got to see the paintings. You know, it wouldn't matter if anybody ever got to see him paint. None of it matters. The thing that mattered the most was applying the paint to the canvas. And you could do that in a spaceship in the middle of nowhere and still be satisfied. And I think about that often because I think about with the guitar, the thing that makes me the happiest is that moment of brushing the strings with my fingers. That's the feeling that makes me the happiest. And I think that if I'm approaching it that way, people that come to the show will be happy that that's the way it is, instead of me trying to put on a facade or something that's not real. Try to make them happy when really maybe I'm not giving them enough credit, and music might just make them happy.
Is all torn and his shoes are gone. Got nothing to eat and nowhere to go. All around the town. And I ain't done nothing wrong. And I can't get up from down. I'm on my way back home, but I got nowhere to go. Near the doorway, he begs for some change and hides from the wind. It's God bless you, ma'am. Owner steps out with beat at your bum all around the town. And I ain't done nothing wrong, but I can't get up from down, and I'm on my way back. Liquor store, he digs through the trash. Smoke butts and cans, can them in for cash. Owner steps out with, I'll kick your ass all around the town. And I ain't done nothing wrong, I can't get up from down, and I'm on my way back. Happened to you, you'd be hungry too. Owner sees red and comes back with a bat all around the town. And I ain't done nothing wrong, I can't get up from down, and I'm on my way back home, but I got nowhere to go. Lies down in a hole in the ground. His coat is gone, there's trash all around. Thrown in a heap to die all alone, all around the town. And I ain't done nothing wrong, can't get up from down, I'm on my way back home, but I got nowhere to go.
You don't only play by yourself. You've played with other people. I know the Hollandale album that you released, I think it was last year, that was a collaboration. And I know that sometimes you have other people playing on your albums with you. How is that different from the music that you play by yourself?
I've been pretty fussy about people that I play with. There's a certain place where it's not really that different. I've gotten really, really lucky in that a lot of the folks that I've collaborated with have kind of come to me. Collaboration, like Hollandale, my friend Alan Sparhawk, he was very generous. And I just played that whole record. It's basically just improvisations on a couple of weird tunings on a 12-string. And he added various bits and colors here and there. Other musicians, including the new record, have been situations where I've sat down and I've played my songs for people that I know and I trust. When I say trust, songs for me have their own trajectory. If people really listen to what the song seems to want, then that's what will happen. And I've been lucky in that everybody I've collaborated with, they get that. They hear where the song wants to go, and they've got no ulterior motives in their minds, and we just play where the song seems to want to go. That been my main objective, finding people to collaborate with. That's also been kind of the hardest thing about my musical life, is that I've often been on my own, that when someone invites me to sit in with them, a little bit slow in the draw, I guess. I'm not a shredder.
You don't just come in and play the guitar and leave.
Really, no.
Regardless of what other people think or do.
God moves on the water, God moves on the water, God moves on the water. People gotta run and pray. God moves on the water, God moves on the water, God moves on the water. People gotta run and pray. It was a year 1912, April the 14th day. Titanic hit an iceberg, and the people got to run and pray. God
moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
People got to run and pray. God
moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
People got to run and pray. Well, sat my on the boat deck, put the lifeboats all around. Let the women and the children go first, and let the poor man drown.
God moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
People gotta run and pray.
God moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
People gotta run and pray. Well, when the lifeboats hit the land, and them women all look around. Wherever over the ocean to see the husbands drown.
God moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
People gotta run and pray. God
moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
People gotta run and pray. Well, you know, Jacob Bass was a millionaire. He had plenty of money to spare. Titanic hit an iceberg, he could not afford the fare.
God moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
People gotta run and pray.
God moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
God moves on the water.
Hey, people gotta run and pray.
You mentioned your new album that is going to be coming out. Is it April 28th?
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. It's a batch of songs. Some of them are older songs. They've been around for a couple of years, trying to find places in other recordings that they never seem to fit in on, and sounding different every time I played them. I went on tour last October through the East and the Southeast and met up with my friend Phil Cook down in Hillsborough, North Carolina, and he said he had gotten this spot. It used to be a tobacco farm near Hillsborough. If I wanted to come out there and work on some of these songs, he's a fellow that I've always really trusted and enjoy his company. Love his band, Megaphone, where they're so good. And so I went out there, and there was a couple of members of his new band out there. It was really, really the most comfortable, perfect setting. It was beautiful. The weather was great. I played the songs. They kind of got it right away. They heard where the songs needed to be. And all these songs, some of them felt like real misfits to me, that they just didn't have any other place. They just woke up and came to life. And we recorded the whole record in a couple of days or less. It was almost first takes all the way through.
Oh, wow.
Just play the songs together, talk about it or not, record it, listen to it or not, move on to the next one. Going to town and play a show that night. It was just the nicest, kind of most relaxing way to record a record for me, and more people than I'm usually used to. I mean, there's more kind of drums and bass and piano on this record. I've been listening to a lot of Spider John Kerner and Willie Murphy's record, Run and Jump and Stand and Still, and I think that influence comes out a little bit in this record. And I'm really, really happy with the way it sounds. It is pretty upbeat. It's got a lot of extra sounds on it that I don't normally have, but what's nice about it is even when I play the songs alone, they've retained that glint that they got from Hillsborough, so I'm excited about it. I was really happy that Red House agreed to get involved and put it out because I really respect them a lot.
It's really interesting that I feel like you keep talking about how the songs themselves become this entity outside of you and outside of everybody that's playing them, and how they take on a life of their own. I think that makes a lot of sense as far as the way our world works and the way energy seems to work.
That's always the way it's felt. I feel like if you try to force something, I'm going to sit down and write a song about a dog, you know, it's never really going to work, because it's kind of the other way around. You're sitting around doing nothing, and all of a sudden a song about a dog occurs to you. You better write it down, or you'll miss it, and it'll go away, and somebody else will write that song about a dog. I've got a story in my head, and the next thing I know, I've got a song, and then the song will let you know what's going to happen next with it. And if it feels right, if it feels done, then so be it. But I don't think songs are ever really done. I rewrite them almost every night when I'm playing little bits and pieces of songs that I've been playing for 10 years that I've recorded a decade ago. I'm still messing around with them, and they're still being written. I don't pretend to be the owner of any of these things, the things that I've been lucky enough to have been passed through me.
Pushes ice in the cathedrals, and the leaves are gone from the trees. Along the highway, they just stand like skeleton bones pushed in the sand. My home, where my love abides. My home, where my love abides. My home, where my love abides. Washing iron all the way to the lake. Lies lit in solitude from snow to snow. Heirloom lands with no fence for the gates. My home, my love abides. My home, where my love abides. My home, where my love abides. My home. The streets hides in doorways and in faces, and makes the lake seem loud. The waves roll and crash and retreat. My home, where my love abides. My home, where my love abides. My home, where my love abides. My slab houses and board Viking ships that are bound for Norway. And they push out over Lake Superior, past the cross, past the light to the sea. My home, where my love abides.
Well, I also wanted to mention, on a somewhat unrelated topic, I know you frequently cook your meals on your car's engine manifold while you're on tour. I just think that's a great way to eat healthy food. You don't have to eat fast food, and you conserve energy and kind of live the morals that you want to live. Do you, I guess, have any tips or thoughts for anybody who would like to try driving across the state of Montana and cooking some beans on their engine?
Montana is a fantastic state to do this in when the weather is good. You can't do it in the rain.
Can't do it in the rain. Why not?
The rainwater blowing up under the hood is great for keeping the engine cool, but it's also great for keeping your food cool. The weather has a huge amount to do with how you're able to cook on that manifold. For example, I was in Texas at one point. I left out of Waco, and this was back when I was still eating meat, and I had some cobalt stew on the manifold, and 17 miles later, it was burnt.
Oh, wow.
117 degrees in the shade, so you've really got to take into account the weather. The car that I have currently is a little tiny Kia. It's really been good for cooking because the motor's relatively efficient, but the exhaust manifold comes out of the back of the motor, and so the motor itself kind of acts like an air dam. You've got to get whatever you're cooking on the exhaust manifold. Just too much air coming through that will interrupt the transfer of heat. And I use tin foil because if you put it in anything, then that transfer of heat is lost. You can't get any warm. Basically, what you're doing is you're reheating stuff. You're steaming stuff. You're never going to saute anything. What I do a lot of is curried foods, steamed vegetables. Burritos are always really good, or quesadillas work well. If you've got a long ways to go, it's good. Or if you live in Chicago and you're driving in rush hour, it's also a pretty good way to cook because things will cook faster in rush hour.
It's not like cooking at home, but it's almost like having a little bit of home with you.
Right. This is old. My friend Dave, railroad engineer, this comes from steam train days. Locomotive engineers would bring their lunch in tin buckets hanging off the manifolds of the engine.
I guess one last question. In addition to cooking while you're on the road, do you write songs? Do you come up with them in your head while you're driving? Or do you mostly separate the touring aspect from the music-making, inventing aspect?
I try to write the songs whenever I can. You never know when you're getting another shot at them. I keep a notebook in the car and pull over, obviously. But I write whenever I can. Otherwise, if I tried to keep everything separated, lately things have been going well. And I've been on the road quite a bit, and so I wouldn't have a lot of time to write if I waited till I got home. I try to keep at it.
Well, I'm very excited that you will be coming to Missoula to play at the Top Hat this Saturday, April 4th. I really appreciate you talking to me.
Thank you. I appreciate you talking to me, and I'm excited to get back to the Top Hat again. I love coming through Montana anytime I get to come through there.
Yeah, and don't you? I think you have a song where you mention the Top Hat, don't you? I can't remember what album that's on.
It's called Nowhere Fast. It's a fictionalized tale of a story some dude in Denver told me about how he'd gotten arrested, hitchhiked all the way up to Missoula, then got stranded trying to find a way out of Missoula. I forgot what happened to him, but he knew about the Top Hat. He'd never been in there, so I embellished his tale of woe a little bit.
I think that's what writing a story is about sometimes.
Yeah.